Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kathleen Sharp, who's a journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, Parade, Elle, and Fortune, among many other publications. She has won 6 awards from the Society of Professional Journalists, among other honors, and she lives in Santa Barbara, California. And I take it you listen on, what is it, 98.7, is
well,
it?
Well, we listen, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kathleen. And your new book, Blood Medicine, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. As I mentioned in the opening, it's about the power of Big Pharma and their ruthless pursuit of corporate profit at the expense of innocent people and patients. And I also mentioned the role, or the lack thereof, of the Justice Department, whose current head is a former partner in the law firm who defended the villain in your book, Blood Medicine, Johnson & Johnson. So recently, just to touch on that, recently, wasn't there a special something that slipped into the must-pass spending bill that helped Amgen?
Right. And Amgen, of course, is the maker of the drug EPO that this book revolves around. But it's not just Amgen. It's Johnson & Johnson. They were one of the executives there, were one of the first people inside the White House when Obamacare was being formed 3 years ago. What you find is the pharmaceutical companies are very, very great at lobbying and sort of forming bills and getting handouts and entitlements that very few of us get. And what I loved about working on this particular book is that it was sort of an intimate tale of two star salesmen who for years and years sold this miracle drug that was EPO. And it was the first biotech blockbuster, and it never ever claimed to cure any disease. All it did was multiply your red blood cells so that you didn't have to take blood transfusions.
Didn't it attract people like the disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong?
Indeed it did. In fact, what this first biotech blockbuster did is it multiplied your red blood cells so much that you could climb alpine mountains, as the Tour de France bicyclist did, or you could fight chemotherapy. And of course, chemotherapy really robs your body of the white and red blood cells, but people who could get an injection of this at about $4,000 a shot could suddenly feel strong enough to undergo the toxic treatment that people have to endure to beat cancer. So that's what the whole drug was. It didn't claim to cure cancer, but it just made you strong enough, allegedly, so you could go through it. But actually, what happened is that this drug was never tested accurately back in 1989. It wasn't tested in the larger patient population pools. So very slowly, they discovered that it not only multiplies your red blood cells, it multiplies your cancer cells. So that people who are hoping to be cured of this horrid disease were actually dying from it. 10 to 17% of the millions and millions of people who were taking it, in fact, died from either heart attacks or strokes. And Lance Armstrong, our disgraced hero, is really quite lucky that he didn't die from an overdose of this drug.
So just to finish up, though, on how Big Pharma has its grip on the Congress, to my mind, there's no other way to make the kind of money that Big Pharma makes from buying a politician. Say you buy a senator for, you know, $10,000. Let's be generous and say you pay $1 million for it.
Well,
and they don't do that, but they get them for tens of thousands. You get back, if you can get a rider in a bill to extend the patent on a drug that you have, you can make billions.
Well,
so the ratio between what you bribe a politician with and the profit you make is unbelievable.
That's right. In fact, I'm kind of ashamed that our congressmen and senators don't up the ante a little bit. Because in this particular case, Amgen and Johnson & Johnson earned $100 billion over 20 years because Medicare and Medicaid paid for this drug. And to some extent private insurers, but you and I as taxpayers paid collectively $100 billion for a drug that really never worked and really doesn't claim to cure cancer. So it's an astonishing black art of lobbying that these two companies perform.
And again, I'm speaking with Kathleen Sharp about her new book, Blood Medicine, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever. So let's talk about the man who blew the whistle.
His name is Mark Duxbury, a very charming salesman. And he was actually a star salesman at J&J who was selling this drug because he really believed that it was helping people. And he'd crisscrossed the Pacific Northwest and began to compete with a good buddy of his down in Tucson. And between the two of them, they kept trying to outsell one another until 5 years or so into their job, they realized that what they're being asked to do is actually quite crooked. They were being asked to pay doctors, oncologists, and nephrologists a few tens of thousands of dollars for speaking engagements or to fly to Hawaii for a weekend resort in order to talk up Procrit or Epogen, as the two brands are called. They were also starting to give these doctors free drug, knowing that they would turn around and bill Medicare and Medicaid for tens of thousands of dollars. And at one point, Mark Duxbury says, "Whoa, you know, boss, I'm not going to do this anymore." And as soon as he started to dig in his heels is when his career started to fall. He had a nervous breakdown at one point. He wasn't able to pay his mortgage. He lost his marriage. He lost his daughter. And he realized what he's got to do is, he was a very stubborn man, and he realized that he was going to start blowing the whistle. But he was very naive, dear Mark. And so what he did is he actually contacted a board of directors on J&J's board, and he didn't get anywhere there. And he came to realize that Johnson & Johnson, one of the most beloved companies in this country, the maker of baby shampoo and Band-Aids, was actually not living in a very, or not acting in a very ethical way, even though they claimed all these, you know, decades to be doing so. So he blew the whistle. He contacted Congress, and yet no one there would listen to him. And that's when I got a phone call in 2004. And he was up in Seattle, and I was down here in Southern California, and the tale he told me was too incredible to be true. I couldn't believe that, you know, the makers of Band-Aid and No More Tears Shampoo was actually deliberately shooting up patients with high doses, unapproved high doses of a dangerous drug. It was like, no, I'm not going to do this story.
And ripping off the taxpayer to the tune of billions.
Billions of dollars. 30 billions, he claimed, at least in this case. But over the years, Mark would call every 3 or 4 months and, you know, tell me a few jokes and spoon-feed me sort of the details of Pharmacology 101. And I began to understand. And then in 2007, what happened is that Congress was holding hearings on the very fast practices, sales practices of J&J and Amgen. And the FDA was slapping a black box warning on the drug. So I got on a red eye and flew to Washington, D.C., and saw right in front of me this national scandal unfolding, both in Congress and at the FDA, and I realized, aha, here is a great story I can tell from the eyes of two good friends who happen to be star salesmen. And that's when I realized I had to move ahead with this story.
And didn't it end up in the Supreme Court? I mean,
It has been, but here's where it is right now. I thought, as perhaps many of your listeners might think, that if the government realized they were being ripped off by billions and billions of dollars, they'd take some action.
Right. Well, naive you.
Oh, very naive. Yes, I remembered my sixth grade civics class, right. But it doesn't quite operate like that today. It's been 10 years that Mark has been in federal district court with this case, and he's lost one appeal, and then it was overturned. Johnson & Johnson has appealed the case to the Supreme Court, but right now what's happening is that I'm going back to Boston in June to watch J&J try to prevent Mark Duxbury's case from going any further.
What's the case in a brief summary?
The case is blowing the whistle on this fraud. It claims that Johnson & Johnson, for years, was illegally shooting up people with an unapproved high dose, 33% higher, and was defrauding, was billing and teaching doctors and hospital chains and pharmaceutical chains how to bill for that high dose. And then was ripping us off of about $30 billion. Yeah. Now, this is not new with Johnson & Johnson. They've just recently settled a case with another drug called Risperdal. They've had numerous, they're in court right now on the hip recalls, the hip replacement. They've had numerous recalls of Motrin, baby Tylenol, 50 drugs in the last few years. So this is a company with a big black eye, but it's no different than Merck or GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, which have also paid high fines for the exact kind of thing that we're talking about.
So Kathleen Schaub, having done this book that's sort of like a detective thriller in a way, and Blood Medicine, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever, this happens all the time because I do often interview whistleblowers. And you say, thank God for whistleblowers, but boy, do they always get shafted.
Oh, they do.
Isn't it amazing? Yes. You wonder why anybody does it.
You do, and I don't think they understand what they're going into when they initially start this process. I've talked to many, many people who've lost their houses, their marriages, and some have even died waiting for justice to be done. But what I love about this book is the sort of spirit of these two men. It's not all bad. To watch them go through the motions of trying to ring the bell for us nationally is really inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite happy, actually, that Hollywood just has not only bought the film rights to the book, but they've hired two great screenwriters, Adam Cooper and Bill Collage, to write it. And they've gotten Ali Sheer, who is the producer of The Bourne Identity, to kind of ride herd on this project.
Wow. So, well, but what attracts me about it is would work in a movie is that they're not your typical bleeding heart liberals. These are salesmen, for God's sake. They're at the heart of capitalism.
That's right. And one of them is very, very conservative down in the, near Phoenix, Arizona.
Right. Well, it has some echoes of that film with Russell Crowe about the tobacco industry.
Exactly. Right? The Insider. Yes, right. That's right. Yeah. And in this case, our, like, Russell Crowe character, who was very high up, our two men were pretty high up. And the beauty of this book, from a journalist's point of view, is that one of the characters, Mark's good friend, Dean McClellan, had warehouses full of documents of every deal he'd done. He had pictures of the doctors that he'd sent to Hawaii. His arm was around the CEO of the company,
there's a really solid paper trail here.
Right,
But of course, who's paying for their lawsuit against the endless coffers of J&J?
Well, great question. In whistleblowing cases, the men do not, and the women who defend these people, do not get paid until they get money for the public. And once they get the billions of dollars back from this fraud, then they're allowed to take maybe 10% of that reward. But the wonderful thing in this particular case is that Jan Schlickman, who was the character in another wonderful book called A Civil Action, is the crusading attorney who's defending Duxbury in this case. So he's not a guy that easily gives up.
I see. Well, so what's your sense then of whether I mentioned our Attorney General Eric Holder being in the law firm that defended the villain in your book Blood Medicine, Johnson & Johnson. A lot of people, of course, have been puzzled about how nobody from Wall Street's gone to jail.
Yeah.
And people wonder about what's wrong with the Attorney General, what's wrong with the Justice Department, and why aren't they standing up against these predators in corporate America. Do you have an answer for that?
Well, I think there's a revolving door that would make your head spin. It goes so quickly. Covington & Burling is the white shoe law firm in Washington, D.C. that defends Johnson & Johnson and does in this case. And yet one of the big partners in that firm was Eric Holder and Lanny Brewer, who perhaps from the headlines of the Wall Street scandal.
Sure. Well, that very good Frontline special, too.
Right.
On why nobody's gone to jail, asking the question, why nobody's gone to jail for Wall Street.
And what did
the
he
answer
say?
Is Lanny Brewer.
Right, right. And he said, we're not going to prosecute the banks.
Right.
And the same thing Eric Holder is saying, we're just not going to prosecute a lot of these cases. And when they do prosecute, they only do it for pennies on the dollar. So right now we have about $300 billion in fraud a year in our healthcare system. And if we had a vibrant Department of Justice and a big cop in the land, I think we would be able to get a lot more money back to, help the orphans or the older people or all of us that really need legitimate health care.
Well, that kind of money, $300 billion?
A year in fraud and waste.
That is a huge part of the burgeoning cost of health care, isn't it?
It is indeed. And it's very easy to cut back on that simply by prosecuting these crimes and putting some executives behind jail.
Right. And they know what they're doing, right?
They're literally on
the government, I can't use the word, memory gland.
Well, they're in and out of those offices, either as the top cop of the land or on the other side of the defense bar.
Right, but they got, didn't they milk the government for $30 billion in this case?
That's allegedly, J&J? That's right, yeah, even though the drug really doesn't work as advertised. Right. But you also, I think there's becoming a lot more awareness, and that's why I'm really, you know, delighted about these men and what they're doing. Americans are understanding that they're being squeezed. You know, not just with the bank fees, but with healthcare fees and the high pharmaceutical prices. So there's going to be a tipping point where people are going to say, enough, basta.
So, but unfortunately, where are the heroes in this? Your guys are the heroes, and we'll be inspired by this film as we were by the Insider. But, you know, how, where are the heroes on Capitol Hill? Where are the heroes in the Congress? I mean, I guess Henry Waxman's done it. Pretty good job. But
yeah, and there's, you know, Bernie Sanders. We have a lot of we have quite a few people who are fighting the good fight, but unfortunately they don't have the big megaphones. And again, I just, the more I talk about this book across the country, I hear people being really outraged at what is going on with our government, and there's a huge effort, I think, to take it back. So there's a lot of heroes. They may not be on Fox and Friends, but they're out there.
Well, you've obviously done a great service here with your book, Kathleen Sharp. And,
thank you.
And I hope that I can't wait to see the movie, frankly.
Well, me neither.
Yeah, well, let's not get into the vagaries of Hollywood.
Right, anything could happen.
Right? Yes, indeed.
Yeah, but so far so good. So thank you, Ian.
Well, it's been a pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for your book. Again, Kathleen Sharp, the author of Blood Medicine, The Man Who Blew the Whistle on One of the Deadliest Prescription Drugs Ever, and she is a journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, Parade, Elle, and Fortune, among many other publications. She's won 6 awards from the Society of Professional Journalists, among other honors. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Monday at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. And, of course, Brittany Gallagher and Brandon Barnard, Barney. Again, Brittany Gallagher and Brandon Barney, without whom this program would not have happened, and I'm deeply grateful to you both. Time one night.